Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. It is a party cast. We've got the party cast crew here. Tim is here. Chris is here. Pernell is here. How is everybody doing?
No, no one has an answer. See, that's what happens.
Just no one talk. Fuck it.
Yeah, no.
That's what happens when you don't let the tangent run its course.
We all did the discreet thing of letting someone else go first, and then no one went first.
Everyone expected Pernell to go first.
You expected wrong.
Not this time. Was.
Fooled you fuckers.
No.
You thought, but it was me, Perno.
Yeah, so no Brooke this week. She is out in the wilds camping with all of her gaming equipment to play Elden Ring.
Yes.
In the wilds.
Yeah, I genuinely laughed at those. Perfect. She's like, here's my photos of my trip. I'm like, are you really going out of the... Are you really roughing it? Because it sounds like you're taking home with you. But I mean,
that's the dream, right? You just go out to the middle of the woods with all your cool stuff and just relax and enjoy the peace and quiet and it being away. Nice,
like, because I'm thinking about finally taking a vacation for the first time probably my freaking life. And I was like, where would I want to go, though? Like, I'm not a city guy, although I live in a city, but I'm not the type that wants to go to, like, a huge resort or anything like that. So I thought about the mountains of Colorado. Like, Colorado would be a great place for someone like me to go. You know, it's above the Mason-Dixon line. It's, you know, rural, you know, and quiet. But then I started thinking, like, how would I feel about my game without my games? And on the positive, I mean, I have a Switch, so I mean, I could take that with me, but I don't know if I'd want to go all in with all the goods, because the hope is that I ultimately end up using the games for nothing but maybe right before I go to bed or something, just to kill time.
Yeah.
I think Brooke's full intention is to game in the wilderness, which I am totally down with. That's good times to me.
A weem away in the jungle.
That's like Magstock levels right there.
The mighty games.
Tim, tonight. Have you ever done a Magstock?
Yeah, I did the first two Magstocks.
Ah, did you? I have never done a Magstock. Rez has been trying to get me to go every year, and I don't know. I'm fat. I sweat a lot. No one wants that around.
I mean,
I'm sweating on the show.
I wish there's a lot of people that are fat and sweat a lot at Magstock. None of them care because they're too busy having fun.
Yeah, though. just everybody is gross by the end of that weekend. Like, everyone's gross together. I mean, like, I went to the thing is that it's a much longer ways for me to go from Buffalo. It's like an extra 2 hours. Because it's a bit somewhere around Richmond. But like the first year, like a bunch of us went and, you know, from Buffalo and had multiple people to go down with. Then the second year, it was just me going down, but I was going down because Rez had my computer and I wanted to get it. And I made that whole drive. He had just built it in the custom case he made for it. It's the same case I'm using now. And
nice. That's awesome.
Yep. Yeah. I've pretty much replaced most of the parts inside at this point, but
it's still in some respects a Rez original.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, the case is still, you know, that's what's important, is it has the X-Strike logo on the side. And
I'm amazed that the case is still big enough. Like when I finally upgraded my PC, I was amazed how much bigger the tower was.
I mean, this case is gigantic. Like, it could be smaller. All things considered, for what I have in it, it could be much smaller. But I did that drive by myself, and it was rough. It was still, you know, a bunch of people I knew there. They had driven down from places closer than Buffalo, but I was just like, I'm not doing this again. And after that, you know, but, you know, shortly after that, it's like, people got kids or doing other things or whatnot, and never made it again.
Drive down from where Rez came from, because that drive is freaking bullshit. There's nothing there. He's in Roanoke.
He's in Virginia, though.
Even still, I feel like I'd rather. I mean, I would admit.
No, I would rather drive from someplace in Virginia than Buffalo.
I don't know. I mean, I've never been to Buffalo, but I've made the drive to New York. There's stuff to see on the road and stuff, though. I guess
it's like seeing stuff doesn't make it better. It just,
yeah,
it's still long as fuck.
Over 10 hours of something.
I guess
in the car. Yeah. Yes.
As someone who's driven to Tennessee and then over to Arkansas multiple times, it fucking sucks, man. Having something to look at doesn't matter. Yeah. Long drive is a long drive.
You just described wouldn't have anything to look at, period. It's just a long drive and just rural bullshit. Or
yeah.
Yeah, it's nothing.
All that to see Mustin's hairy ass. Yeah.
Was it everything you wanted? Yes.
Yeah, Magstock was great. Had a fun time, but it's just... And also just like when it happens is a tough time at work for me. It's always like middle of June and there's a lot going on, so it's... It would be tough. And at this point, I have the child, so it's like, no, forget it. But back when it was anything resembling an idea, that was getting in the way. But whatever.
Nah, we're old now.
Oh, yeah. No, though. Would you say you prefer Magstock or Magfest?
Oh, Magfest.
Really?
Yeah. I know some people really like the vibe of Magstock, where it's... I don't know if it's like the same people that go every year. I mean, there's some people that love it, but it's, you know, it's very casual, just kind of walking around, meeting people, talking to people, and very relaxed and less. But I mean, I don't like camping to begin with. I am the camper who does like Brooke does and gets a structure and sleeps in it on a bed, and there is electricity,
air conditioner.
And, yeah, you look out the window and you're like, oh, there's nature. I can walk out and engage it if I so choose. If I am in it.
Do you at least not have to worry about the Colossus roar while you're there?
I don't know at this point. I'm pretty sure that it was there the first year or two I was there, but
I think the only roar you have to worry about is the actual wildlife.
I'll take it.
Roar. Was that a bear or was that some asshole?
Just some drunk person.
But yeah, actually sleeping in a tent or, and you know,
it's a drunk bear. Run.
I don't care for that. And you also get people, there's no doors or walls, so anybody's can come wandering into your campsite, you know.
And they do, I bet.
Not that people aren't respectful, but it's like, you know, in the later hours, drunk people just think it's fun to walk around and say hi to everybody. Not that there was any disrespect or anything, but just saying, you never know who's going to come by. But that's part of the fun.
The drunkenness.
Part of the fun and or horror.
Yeah, exactly. It cuts both ways, but... You know, I like the MAGFest and everything that comes with it.
Ernell, did you ever do a stock?
Nah. Like, you know, my legend, my old thing, I went to MAG 1, I worked with MAG 2, and then said, fuck it, for 8 years. And I came back because Joe was like, you're getting for free, and there's a panel. I'm like, okay, well, if you said free, we have to see what this whole thing became over the years. And I was like, wow, this show really grew. I thought it died at this point, but it did not. It exploded. And I was happy to see that it was still going. And the only thing that made me sad, which is a small sad, is that I honestly always prefer smaller conventions for like the vibe, which is why I was like, no, Magstock would probably be a cooler vibe. But it's just so big now. Like, there's no cozy at Bagfest. It's just, unless you're in your room, of course. Mm-hmm. But outside of your room ain't no damn cozy. It's just a madhouse. It's a fun madhouse. Mm-hmm. And I'm always tired.
Chris, but what years were you at Magfest? Were you there for the Gaylord?
Yeah, I was at that first one. That was where my band actually played.
So you got to see the Alexandria and the Gaylord.
Yes, my first one was at the Alexandria, so that was Mag 9, and then my band played at 10 and 11, and then 10 did 12. And then, like, skipped the next two, I think, and came back for whichever one was in 2016 and 17. And then I haven't been back since. But every time, I drove all the way from Texas.
That is ridiculous.
Woof!
Yeah.
But did you have stuff to look at, Chris?
Did you have stuff to look at, Chris? That's an important question.
Don't let keep my eyes on the road, yo.
Yeah, if you're driving, you can't look at shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Is there stuff in your periphery?
If your wife's driving, she doesn't know where she's going.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like Tennessee has some things to look at because you got to go through Memphis and Nashville.
But you have a wife?
No. I don't know where Joe got that.
No, my wife.
I'm learning about Chris.
Yeah, my wife. We were Aleshon's in Missouri, And she was like, do we go east or west? I'm like, I'm driving.
That's a problem. I have no idea where Elshon lives, and I'm going to assume you were supposed to go
Missouri. I said Missouri.
Yeah.
I didn't hear that part. I just took a guess anyway. And I was still
he's in Missouri.
All right, Purnell, you're not driving anymore.
Only one time.
No, I would have been driving because I would have been driving east. So I don't know what you're talking about.
Only one time when I was coming back from the MAGFest in 2016, I stopped in Missouri for a different friend just to, like, you know, hang out and then spend the night and get on the road the next day instead of driving the straight 26 hours.
Smart.
Yeah. And I don't like the Missouri to Texas route, so I avoid it when I can. I had to do that once this year, and it sucked.
26-hour freaking drive. At that point, you probably have to burn the car on the other side for the mileage you put on it.
It's actually not that bad. When I first got my pretty good mileage, like, smaller car, which was the 2016 MAGFest, I think I got there for, like, less than $120, which is, like, a fifth of a plane ticket.
Yeah, I was about to ask, like, because at first my thought was, like, why not just drive there? But you just kind of answered it. Like,
yeah, I mean, it takes many more hours. But, I mean, you know, if you take an extra day off work or something and just plan on being on the road that entire day, it's doable. I mean, at that point, I had, like, I had the Droid Sound emulator on my phone, so I could just listen to, like, video game sound files and just infinite loops and stuff. So it's like, you know, I was entertained. I was totally fine.
No, the first time I did a long drive with XM radio blew my mind. It's like I could listen to stand-up comedy while I drive. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, perfect. I can't fall asleep during stand-up comedy. I'm too busy laughing. Usually.
Unless you listen to a lame comic, and then which case,
this is like Brian Regan or someone.
You know you're a redneck if you do nothing.
You know you're a redneck if you do comedy from 2004. It's not 2004, is it? Oh, why are you booing me?
I can't believe he did a participation trophy joke in 2022.
I know.
That's so ridiculous. I mean, I never liked him anyway, but it's like, because, you know, I grew up in rural Texas, so just, you know, too close to home. but yeah, I don't know. It's silly.
Ah, well. Anyway, we got games to talk about. Should we get to that?
Well, it depends. Is there something, is there a lot to see while we talk about?
I don't know, Purnell. Is there?
Maybe. Well, if you were on Twitch, you could watch Joe.
Yeah. Well, you could see my ridiculous facial hair that I shaved for my dental appointment tomorrow, so I look Amish.
Oh, yeah. I wasn't going to ask about it, but I'm glad I know about it now.
Yeah. Yeah. My last episode with teeth. Next time you hear me, I will have dentures. So we'll see how fucking stupid I sound next episode.
I'll take it because it probably means you'll be in less pain, too.
Yeah, probably.
So it's worth it. Go gummy, but pain-free gummy. God, if you do that for the first episode, I'll be so happy.
Just take the teeth out and go without them for the first 20 minutes. Oh, wait, I have these. Hey, anyway, should we get to reviews?
Let's get that business.
All right, first game to talk about tonight is Ed-Zero Zombie Uprising, developed by Lan Karze, published by D3 Publisher, released April 4th on Steam for $19.99. Slaughter the Dead, Face the Unpredictable, roguelike action where traditional Japanese characters destroy hordes of zombies. Since everything is randomly generated each time you play, no run will be the same. Need to make harsh decisions to survive. Tim, tell us about your time with Ed-Zero.
Oh, Ed-Zero. See, that's a play on Edo, I believe.
Oh, is it?
I mean, it's in Japan, so I think Edo. That's what they're going for here. Yes, with that game. So yeah, early access. So dash your grains of salt across this review, because the game still has work to be done on it. And boy, does it have work to be done on it. Or does it? Yes. So this game, the idea is it will eventually have one of four different characters you can play. They are not all in the game at present. It starts you out as a samurai Or as a zombie or something like that. I like immediately forgot like the So it drops you in into this game. And it immediately, you know, I kind of get in there and I'm like, oh, this feels pretty familiar to another game that I've been playing a lot of lately. That being Elden Ring. The combat and the controls feel very Souls-y. Somewhat Souls-y, I guess I should say, that you got your attacks up on your bumpers. You got a roll over on your circle button or B button, A button, whatever, hanging out over there on your controller of choice. You got a jump. You are locking on to enemies to attack them. You pick up glowing items off the ground, though they are far more glowy in this game and different color to show you what you are picking up. You navigate your items on your cross pad, move your character with your stick. When you hold down left bumper, you actually you have the ability to use skills that are mapped to the face buttons. But generally, like as soon as I'm feeling those attacks on the shoulders and the dodge, I'm like, oh, okay, this is feeling a little Souls-y here. And so they drop you in there as your samurai guy, and you're in a dark woods, and you start tromping around, and this is the tutorial where they kind of run you through the basics of what the game does, and then at the end of the tutorial you're forced to die, much like in a Souls game, and you come back to life because of your zombie powers in a town, which
does that have any kind of like "you died" on the screen?
No, not like that.
Oh, that's depressing.
It has something there, but it didn't stick with me.
Yeah.
So you like the premise of the game is that like some steamship rolled up on the shores of Japan and there were zombies on it. So now there's a zombie apocalypse happening. That's the story.
Nice.
Yeah. So your character, when you die, you'll get bounced back to town where you can use your accumulated gold and I don't know what the other currency is called, like your experience that you accrue to purchase items or permanent upgrades for your character to make yourself stronger. So that when you launch yourself back into the breach, you will have an easier time and theoretically go farther. Now where this game is not strictly Souls-like in that its structure is a rogue-like in that the dungeons are randomly generated. When I say dungeons, I mean that aforementioned dark woods, which is the only environment that I saw in lots of that. And it's not like a sprawling forest. Like you are on pathways through the forest. Like you don't just go wandering through the trees. Like it kind of has a set layout, but it will randomly generate a layout for the forest, and it is floor based, so you are looking for an exit to your floor of the forest to move on to the next area and the next area and the next area and the next area until you kind of complete the dungeon, at which point you can escape with all of your shit rather than if you die partway you take a penalty, which wasn't too harsh from what I saw. It was like 30% of your gold, which is not the end of the world. At least early on in the game, it's not the end of the world because you're more concerned with like the permanent buffs to your character. Now, as you're stomping, tromping around, you will find items, some of which are unidentified, another rogue-like staple. So you can either just use them and be surprised by their good or bad effects, or you can wait and then use other items to identify them. Your inventory is actually pretty small. It's only 10 items deep, so you fill that up pretty quick. So it wants you to use your items to progress. Now, the actual meat and potatoes of this game is just fighting a whole lot of zombies, awful zombies, just... That's it. Like you're stomping, tromping around. You run up to some zombies. You attack, 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 attack. They are very damage spongy early on because they are expecting you to upgrade your character and become more powerful to take them out quicker. But as it is, not like super engaging tit for tat combat. It's just kind of like run up, mash the button, move away for a moment if you think the zombie's about to attack you, then go up and mash some more. It's not super challenging. Even like more advanced zombies, I just pretty much did the same thing, just like attack, 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 down they go. Just kind of really mindless stuff. The game overall is pretty rough looking. Like it looks like what we imagine to be PS2 era these days, even though I know it's probably well better than that, but it's when you think of PS2, this is what it looks like. So it's like, it looks pretty rough. And pretty shortly into the game, I'm sitting there, I'm like, man, this kind of reminds me, is this like what those like Onichanbara games are like? Who developed this? And the developer is not the same, but the publisher is. And then I was like, oh, okay, I see what's going on here. Because they also published like EDF and the aforementioned bikini zombie slashing games. So at that point, I started to realize like, oh, this is kind of, I think, going into that vein of kind of this janky B-movie video game where it is kind of mindless and grindy, but some people are kind of into that shit. And that's what's going on here, I believe. Is that game for me? No, it is not. I got bored pretty quickly of just the same over and over again, kind of run up, knock down some zombies, boom, 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 and then, you know, move on with my life. There's also like some stealth and backstabbing if they're facing the other way, but there's only so much of that. But yeah, it's in its current form. You know, it doesn't change the fact that the game looks rough. It doesn't change the fact that it definitely got monotonous pretty quickly. Like the environments, there is no great variance in them at this time. There will be more characters eventually, but for now there is only two.
Yeah, I think they said they plan on adding a third, so it's not like it's going to have that much more. No, unfortunately.
No. Well, there's going to be four. There's like a samurai, a sumo wrestler, which it's probably going to be the most fun to try out, a ninja, and something else, which is, I'm just blanking there. But, you know, it just came out in early access, so a lot can happen. But from what I played, it looks like, you know, that is the angle. I don't expect things like kind of what I perceived as monotony and kind of the roughness of the overall look to it. I don't expect those. I think those are features, not bugs, basically, in short. So I think this game is going to have appeal to people that already are into Onichanbara and
we need a name for games like that, like games like Risen,
Earth Defense Force.
Like Risen have the Eurojank subgenre that is so lovingly bestowed upon it. We need something like that for these games, like J-Jank or something. I don't know.
They're D games, specifically D3 games, I guess one could say. I mean, they publish other stuff, but it's like, yeah.
No, it's $20 early access. They plan to be in early access for at least 6 months. They plan to add more quests, characters, enemy skills, items, and more in the full version, and the price may increase as content is added. Is it worth jumping into this at $20? Is it worth wishlisting it and keeping an eye on it? What are your thoughts on this game?
It's probably worth keeping an eye on only if you are into those things that I already mentioned. So if that is not your bag, I don't think this game is going to polish itself up to being, you know, that. Oh, there is only three characters. But if it is, then this is probably something you're going to want to keep an eye on. But yeah, they say there's like about 10 hours of gameplay available in there right now. So that's not the worst for a $20 game. But yeah.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is Sock Venture, developed by Nighthouse Games, published by Versus Evil, released April 14th on the Switch for $19.99. Sock Venture is a story about a kid whose favorite sock gets eaten by a cursed washing machine. Kid needs immediate help and calls superhero to the rescue, and the adventure begins. Make your way through the dangerous levels to find the missing sock inside the washing machine. I think all of you played this. Who wants to start?
What a fucking premise for a video game, right? Like, the fuck are you thinking? Like, they just had to get from point A to B somehow, and they're like, let's just do the stupidest, like, just socks lost in the washing machine, which gets increasingly filled with buzzsaws, and, like, this little laundry goblin you're playing as who throws socks over his head, and, like, I don't know, that kid seems insufferable, who is not who you're playing as, but he seems like a real freaking bozo.
He really is.
Clearly, y'all have never tried to live with a cursed washer.
So. Man, you know, I think I might.
I mean, if I did, I'd throw that kid into it.
It was a washer-dryer combo, though, so.
That's not cheating.
Doesn't expressly, but it was
Might as well fill it with buzzsaws at that point.
It was certainly cursed, and it might have been. So this game is a, I mean, I just talked a whole bunch, so if one of you guys want to run me over, feel free. this is like a Meat Boy-ish, you know, kind of challenging precision platformer type deal. Yeah?
Yeah, I would say so. Though I will say, unlike the Meat Boys and the like, I honestly felt, maybe it's just because I played them for a while, but I felt like this was easier than those, in that it's a good entry point for people who like that, who could be interested in that kind of thing, but don't like the constant death that usually comes with those. Because while you will die in this game, I didn't feel like I was beating my head into a wall to figure out the solution to the puzzles I was trying to run through. Yeah. And it also has some pretty cool gimmicks too. Like, they had these like tablet steps where you had to hit the button to bounce off of them. But if you didn't hit the button, you fell through them. So it had a little bit of precision button pressing that I'm not used to seeing in a lot of those games.
Yeah, I agree that I felt like it was much more approachable, because it feels like a lot of these games, when I play them, like, they are they start off with the expectation that, like, you have already been playing this style of game. I feel like, and it feels like they're escalating from not a starting point for most players. But this more felt like, OK, we're going to ease you in, and they layer in mechanics kind of pretty gradually. And so it's an easier time ramping up. And I didn't really hit a wall in terms of difficulty until I'm damn near close to, like, what I perceived to be the end of the game. Otherwise, I was kind of just going through at a good pace, you know, feeling good.
It says there's over 200 levels in the game. So,
to be honest, when you're playing through, you won't even notice how many levels are, because the way they designed it, you just go from screen to screen, but there's like chapters. So it's like, Meat Boy would be like, hey, one chapter is like one stage is one level section. So that would be a room, quote unquote. But in this game, a chapter could be anywhere from like 10 rooms to like 30 rooms. You don't know until you get in there.
Yeah, some of them are longer than others.
But Chris, you were going to say something too, right?
I was going to say exactly what you just said.
Great minds think alike, eh?
Yeah.
It's just something about it. Like, I like the fact that even though the abilities that you get aren't particularly like new abilities that you're like, oh, wow, fantastic, I've never utilized that before, or this is
special. Oh, boy, a double jump.
Yeah, double jump.
They take a while before they give that to you.
It's very true.
I love that they did that, because like, what ends up happening is that the abilities themselves don't particularly make the game easier. It's just once you get them, now they know we can integrate this move into the puzzles or into the stage puzzles. But similar to what Tim was saying about easing you in, I think that's an aspect of easing you in. Like, they set you up with like a limited move set, and they design the levels around that limited move set. Then they give you a new one, and that move allows you to do more things. But I will say, even though the moves weren't fairly, you know, they were fairly typical, the dash was something unique to me as far as how it was executed. You know, I had to get it in there. Because in this game, the dash isn't just press the button and you dash a la Celeste or a la Meat. Well, I see Meepo didn't have a dash, or the Glam did. But in this game, when you press the button, you either tap it to move in one of three directions, you know, left, right, or up. But you can also hold it down to do like a charge dash. So not only can you move in multiple directions, but you can also like kind of buy yourself a second of breathing room by charging yourself in the air. Like, okay, I got a second to think about the next move while I'm also charging up my dash.
But also it will send you different distances depending on how long you charge it. So you have to be careful about that.
Yeah, which is kind of bad for me, because I played it kind of like how I play like Mario, like Super Mario Brothers, where I always hold the dash button down because I can't not run in that game. Every dash is a power dash for me. Mm-hmm. And I have died multiple times until I nailed down, like, just tap it or just step farther back to do the dash because you're good enough for it. Like, it. But it's like, it's
so funny. I hear you can find socks in the game to wear.
Yep. Yes.
Yeah.
Hey, like a pantyhose thief.
Yeah. Your guy wears them kind of like a cloak, like over his head. Yeah, they're just like different costumes, basically, for your little sock goblin character.
And that's also where the insufferable kid comes in, because I swear, I mean, he loses his socks and his washing machine, and this hero just comes up and says, "Don't worry, kid, I'll find your socks, despite your bumbling and tomfoolery." And then every time he finds a sock, it's like, "Hey, kid, I found this sock." He's like, "Yeah, that's the dumb sock. I never wear that piece of crap. Keep looking. You'll find it somewhere, hero." And he's like, and the hero's like, "My temperament is perfectly fine. I'll help you. Keep helping you wherever." The ending should be him saying, "I found your favorite sock. Go fuck yourself."
Well, it's rated like, E10, so I don't see that one happening.
"Hey, I found your favorite sock. I'm not returning it to you."
Yeah, I'll say I enjoyed the wall cling mechanic, and that you could actually hold down the button to just stick there. Which is something they use, and I would forget about from time to time, where it's like sometimes like your only safe place is clinging to the side of a moving platform or just like the lip of a wall or something like that.
I feel like it does a good job of like kind of combining or having you combine moves. Like when you learn a new one, it's like, well, now you're going to use it with everything else you've learned.
Yeah.
And the buttons that they use, like the button placement for using the moves, it's honestly fairly intuitive. Like, I never felt myself doing that thing where you have to cross your thumb across two buttons or anything like that. I never felt like the wall grab was, you know, conflicting with how
like the Mega Man X claw grip.
Yeah, I had to do that in this game. It was kind of nice. Like, it felt. Yeah. Oh no, I think they did. I think they did a good job with this game, and it's amazing because, again, I like to say this a lot because I think it's a very valid point to make. This is one of those games where, like, when I saw it on the eShop, I wasn't particularly jazzed by it visually. It didn't really stand out to me. But having a chance to actually play it, is a reason
how
to say
didn't
that.
This I mean, one stand? You're finding a fucking sock. How
have you, dude? Have you seen some of the descriptions on the eShop? That ain't nothing. I mean, it's
fair.
A good description.
Yeah,
but
fair.
The eShop has some weird shit on it.
It does.
But
it, I was going to say, I was not particularly enticed by this game when Joe sent it to me either, but I was like, whatever, it's on Switch, which means it's like convenient for me to play. And like, yes, I too ended up being pleasantly surprised by pretty much everything about it. Like, I mean, there's like that first moment where you're playing as the kid and that's awful.
Yeah.
But like, once you get going with your laundry goblin, actually like get into the meat of the game, which, you know, takes like 10 seconds. I was just like, oh, this actually like feels good. Like, I think the art,
Well, thank God it's a game.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, I've played a lot of these games. I feel like that are just like, just don't feel good. Like, they look kind of like garbagey. I feel like the graphics of this game, like, look nice and make it like reading the screen for what you need to do. I did not find to be a problem like 99% of the time. Like, it looks good. Your character moves well. It feels good. So like, despite everything with the ridiculousness around it, it's like, okay, no, this is actually like a really solid game.
No, it's $20. What do you guys think about it?
I think Chris was trying to say something.
Oh, well, tough shit.
Oh,
no. No, what were you going to say?
I got the whole next review to myself, so, you know, I don't have to say too much. I was just going to add in like three quick points. First point about the aesthetics. There's a little bit of a thing to Purnell's point about like reading eShop descriptions. Like, you know, standing out is the new blending in as far as like indie games go. So, yeah, the fact that it is like different actually kind of makes it look samey. But I like that the aesthetics are kind of Earthworm Jim-esque. Like, everything's a little bit exaggerated, and it's like the heating coils of the heat element of the dryer makes for like a lava-filled fire level, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, and you can make that connection even though it's all abstract. The other thing I was going to say, yeah, super smooth frame rate and really precise controls, so it that's really worth mentioning because sometimes these games don't have that. And that's definitely something on display here. The other thing is that even though it's not super hard, it does have the medal system where like you get one medal for beating the level, but the other medal has to be done without losing a life, and the other metal has to be grabbing all of the coins that they have scattered throughout the stage, which actually makes sense because, you know, people lose their change in in the washer. So that's actually maybe the first game where that. Maybe the first game where that actually makes sense.
There's also if you die enough times, it'll offer you the option of making a mid-level checkpoint.
Yeah.
That's a way to make things easier. Yeah, they thought of a lot of stuff with this game.
Nice. Like,
yeah.
So those are my only points. Just pile those on.
Yeah, well, $20. What do you guys think?
I'd give it a buy easily.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, me three.
Three for three. Sounds like a good one.
Yeah.
But keep in mind, we all agree that surprise. The game was not particularly it didn't click on the eShop, but it actually didn't get a try. They got a straight up buy. Just goes to show quality gameplay does prevail.
It goes to show, listen to more podcasts to tell you what to play.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, if I looked at this game, I would be like, no, I wouldn't give it a second thought.
And Carnage in chat says, excited to hear that the game doesn't suck.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that means, hey, it's time for me to go to bed. thanks for that reminder. I've had enough of this day.
You get to leave.
You're stuck here. You get to deal with him, and I do not.
Yeah. So, any final words?
Have a good night, everybody.
Have a good night, sir.
Next game to talk about is Tormented Souls, developed by Dual Effect Games and Abstract Digital, published by P-Cube Limited, released April 14th on the Switch for $19.99. Classic survival horror is back. Solve puzzles and face sinister enemies in deadly combat in this relentless nightmare as Caroline Walker hunts for his missing twin girls in a cavernous abandoned mansion. Can you confront your fears and uncover the secrets of Winter Lake, or will you die trying? Chris, what is going on in Tormented Souls?
Tormented Souls is what happens when the heels of your sock get too worn through.
Oh, anyway.
Just tying it in.
Damn you.
Damn. No, you should say darn me, because darning.
Darning, you know, socks. You suck.
Yeah. See, I tried to make that joke and nobody caught it, but now I had to do that thing where I say it over and over again.
It's okay. It hit, so.
Hooray. So Tormented Souls, speaking of tormented hosts and tormented chat.
You're on fire today.
Oh, thank you. The Tormented Souls, this is a throwback retro survival horror game. This lands in the kind of genre of games that I entirely missed as the first time they went through, because they came out on things like the PlayStation, where there were all the Final Fantasies. Like your Resident Evils and your Silent Hills. I never got around to them. I didn't get around to Resident Evil until 4, and I only picked up Silent Hill 2 kind of recently because I met the guy who wrote the music for it, and so I was like, I got to get this autographed. And then as soon as I bought it, the game skyrocketed in value completely. Yeah, that's a whole different story. I'm late to the genre, so just putting that out there is a way to calibrate your own tastes to my experience. Tormented Souls follows, was it Caroline Walker?
Yep.
Oh, I got it. I didn't
Good
even
job.
Make that note. Thank you. As she basically goes from one mansion to the other, the story starts with her, she's going out to this mansion to investigate this mysterious picture she got of some twin girls. But she's she lives in a mansion or something. And she's doing her makeup, even though she's already got makeup on and she's already got her fingerless gloves on. It's weird. I don't know. But that's kind of there's a little bit of a dorkiness to this game, a little bit of a cheesiness to it that I think fans will appreciate. And it's things like that. Yeah, she goes to this on a boat out to what looks like Dracula's castle, but it's a mansion / dilapidated hospital from the Victorian era. Surprise. And, as she's looking around, she gets bonked on the head like you do. And then she wakes up naked in a bathtub of really terrible green water with a tube stuffed down her throat and one of her eyes missing.
Oh, nice.
So that's that, you know,
pleasant way to wake up.
Yeah, exactly. That's, you know, you're starting the day on the wrong side of the bathtub in that. But so yeah, then, you know, she puts on her clothes, which were right there apparently, and starts to investigate this mansion as if nothing happened. She's just got like this bandage over the empty socket where her eyeball used to be. And the first actual person she comes across, like, you have to do a few puzzles and run into an enemy before you run into your first like real person who's not a suspicious at all priest. And when she's talking to him, she doesn't even mention, like, she's just like, what's going on here? And then she's like, I'm trying to find these twins, blah, blah, blah. Like, she doesn't mention that her eyeball was stolen, like, violently or surgically or whatever. It's like, I don't know. I don't know how the eyeball thing
resolves. What would he have done if she said that? Like, hey, just say, guy, while we're here, I'm missing an eye. Have you seen it?
She like, talks to him, and she's like, something's going on here. When she just, like, walked by or tried to fight a wheelchair bound like torso that's been fused to it and is attacking her with knife fingers.
No, that was fucking hilarious.
Yeah. And then he's like, oh, there's nothing going on around here. It's just like, you know, bumps in the night or whatever, you know, like things like that. And then she just doesn't even mention, oh, by the way, I woke up in a bathtub with my eye missing. She's just like, I need to find these twins because I've been having nightmares. I don't know. Anyway, I'm getting into the weeds with this priest here. Let me just say the game's really amusing in ways that are awkward, but like I said, very it's almost better than if it was like really well written or acted. Fully voice acted, by the way, which is pretty good for a, you know, an indie game like this. But anyway, yeah, so it's all about exploring this mansion and trying to kind of find your way into like different areas, solving different things for practical reasons, such as like having to turn on the lights, because if you spend too much time in the dark, then something eats you. And, you know,
nice.
And it is truly a survival horror game because ammo is limited. Your main weapon for most of the game is a nail gun. So you're just sitting there just like you're building a deck. You're just like pumping nails into like all these like terrible beasties who are just like kind of going through these like, you know, stilted attack animations and stuff. And you're just like, yeah. I mean, you can take them down with a crowbar, but good luck, because you don't heal in this game, through time. You only can use your limited, healing items, which you can find throughout the game. And by the same token, you're limited on the amount of times you can save in the game because you require an item to do it. That is going to turn some people off. But, you know, that's
classic kind of 90s mechanic. I mean, the Outbreak games are doing the same thing.
Exactly. So, yeah, this game does have some good modernizations. I mean, for one, like, the environments look really, really good. It's, you know, the acting and, you know, kind of some of the animations are very PlayStation 1 and 2, but, like, the actual, like, environments and surroundings are really nice looking, especially, like, the light effects and stuff, because, like, for the most part, until you can turn on, like, the lights in an area, you're going to be holding out a match, and, like, it casts, like, this big, huge shadow on things, and, like, it's kind of cool. So, you know, there's some modernizations like that. There's also the fact that if you're controlling with the stick, you have full range motion. But if you switch to the control pad, you have good old-fashioned tank controls. Which, by the way, the way the game teaches you the controls is you find a clipboard on the wall that just has drawings on it. And one of them just shows a drawing of a directional pad, and then it just equal signs shows a tank. a stick illustration shows somebody running, and I just really love that.
That's cute.
I just love that it shows like an actual like Sherman tank. Anyways, but having said, like, even though you can move around with freedom, which is great, because I would have not liked this game if I would have been forced to do tank controls, because I wasn't in that era, so I did not get used to that style of control.
I'm going to tell you something. Mm-hmm. I was in that era, and it was great for the time because it worked. But in a modern game, I don't want to do it. It's nice that it's a feature, but don't make me do it.
Exactly. But the thing that this game does have, however, is fixed cameras. So, you know, when you're moving from one side of a room to another, you might be in a different orientation entirely, which in that case, tank controls actually do kind of make more sense because, you know, when you're pushing up on a stick, you might accidentally run back and forth between two camera angles.
Yeah.
Now, they set it up cleverly enough that it was never a problem, but it was still something to kind of get used to, and sometimes you'll get attacked from behind the camera. So, yeah, there's a little bit of that, too. Fortunately, the game has...
Cameraman killed you?
No, but somebody behind the cameraman is coming at you. So, yeah, there's like a little bit of awkwardness to this game, but ultimately it was really fun. Not super scary. I mean, it has cool monsters. No huge bosses, though, I noticed. Like, it's not like you get into a big empty room and then this giant pile of flesh is, like, attacking you. It seems to be mostly just variations on different, like, medical experiment enemies with, like, the knife hands and things like that.
Yeah.
I thought they were way cool, but, yeah, it's, you know, nothing to write home about. Oh, what was I saying, though? I was coming up to a point. But, yeah, it's... Yeah, it's really cool. It's mostly all about the puzzle solving, really, and I didn't even touch on the puzzles, really. It's that kind of thing where you've got an inventory system, you pick up items all throughout, and they can, you know, work on different puzzles and such, and it'll be things like you got to pick up the item and look at it and then kind of pixel hunt for a way to interact with it or combine it with something else. And, like, you know, the very, very
first puzzle has... Is it a limited inventory in this one?
Yeah, but it's not for, like... You know, you can't have a gun if you have a wrench kind of thing. It's more like these are the items that you need and they'll disappear as you use them up and stuff. So I don't know. Right. The inventory didn't seem unmanageable, but I don't think I made it far enough in the game where that was, you know, really on the table. But yeah, it's things like, you know, you pick up a pipe wrench, right? And then you come across a door and, oh, there's no handle on the door. Well, there's the thing. If you had a wrench, then you can open the door. Well, you got the wrench in the door, but you can't open it still. Oh, you have to actually look at the wrench and activate the wrench to open it up a little bit so that you can now get it around that. You know, it's things like that. Yeah. So,
well, the game's $20. What do you think about it?
Yeah, it's worth $20 for sure. I actually thought it was more expensive, and I was going to say buy it. So if you're a classic horror fan, then yeah, this is going to be a really fun addition to your thing. You know, if you're expecting to be terrified more than like just a couple of jump scares, then, you know, this is more of like a horror adventure than it is like straight up terrifying.
Yeah.
So yeah, I liked it. It's really good.
Cool. All right, next up is Cathedral, developed by Decemberborn Interactive, published by Elden Pixels, released April 12th on PS4 for $14.99. Wake up in a world with no recollection of how you got there, a world full of secrets, hidden rooms, dungeons, and towns. Cathedral features a vast world meant for exploring. Purnell, tell us about your time in Cathedral.
Oh, man, that's a little disappointing, but not in a bad way of the review itself, just personal. Like, I thought Elden Pixels developed the game, but... So,
oh, yeah, they published it. I actually bought this one.
Yeah, because this is a... So, like, because for those who don't know, I'm a huge sucker for Elden Pixels, specifically because of All Was Awakening and then All Was Legacy. So I was like, ooh, when that name popped up on the screen, I was like, oh, man, I got a good game to review over here. And suffice to say, though, I will be blunt. This game is honestly very on point. Like, I think the game is great. I even thought it was funny that they did have a cameo of the main character from All Was Awakening in this game, which made me
laugh. Nice.
But what is this game? What is Cathedral? A title that is not a selling point. Like, what is this game all about? So
at first, I thought it was going to be a game. I thought it was a cat pun. I thought it was going to be Cathedral.
A place where humans roam.
Like, I don't know. I thought it would be like some like action adventure like, JRPG with a cat. Like Cat Quest, yeah. I don't know.
I was thinking like a side scroller, like a Castlevania.
Castlevania. Oh, well, yeah, there you go.
Well,
you gotta be kidding me with these puns.
It does have scrolling to the side and both horizontally and vertically because this is an adventure platformer game. Lots of exploration, lots of journeying. You start out as a guy in a red suit of armor who wakes up in a cathedral. Hit the title. And he has no idea why he's there or how he got there. And neither do you, the player. You're just trying to move around and get the hell out. In fact, the first question in the game is get out of the cathedral. And as you run around, you eventually come across a little ghost person who was a dick at first, but then later turns out to not be as much of a dick as you originally thought. And he teams up with you to try to find a way out of this place you're in, which in turn creates the overall quest of the game, which is to find a group of talismans that can be embedded into a door to open it and hopefully send your butt home. You won't be seeing those for a very long time because this game is massive. This is a really big game. You'll be traversing multiple regions of the game's universe, like typical zones, like, you know, the snow region and the hot region or whatever, but in the wooded region. But you'll also come across some cool places too, like the Blood Garden. I did like the fact that there was a place called the Blood Garden. It was just very metal. and as you're exploring, you at base value, you have a few things at your disposal. You have a sword for stabbing. You have a suit of armor for not getting stabbed as hard. And you have a health potion, which can be used to restore a series of hearts in your health bar. It's pretty much the only healing item in the game. And it's replenished every time you go to the healing facility in town. Or rather, when you die, too. If you die, it replenishes as well. But you'll be hopefully... Oh, yes, who am I kidding? You're going to die a lot because the game is not easy. But it's fun. So you have those things to work with. And as you run around trying to solve quests and the like, you'll come across various upgrades, too, including when I just picked up a health bottle, which will give you more health items.
You're playing it right now, aren't you?
Yeah, because I'm hooked on it.
You wiener.
Hey, I like what I like, and what I like is this game, so I'm good. So you'll be exploring, trying to find different stuff. You'll find new items, which can be used in a variety of ways. Like, the main one I've been using is this. It's like a harpoon gun, or it's pretty much arm crossbow. You can fire arrows at that, which can be used to attack distant enemies and the like. But you can also come across some cool little, like, I don't want to call them upgrades, but it's called them abilities. And they come in a variety of different forms. They're like charm types. There's like movement based ones, there's attack based ones, and there's like skill based ones. You can only equip one per category at a time, but they provide you with a variety of different abilities. Like some which can let you utilize that soul guide I was telling you about before, the little ghost friend, to like kind of move around and help solve puzzles for you. And you can fly into places that you can't reach. And there's a double jump, which you get early, which isn't as broken as I would like for it to have been, but it's still better than nothing. But one thing I liked about the double jump in this game is usually double jumps are just meant to, you know, get to higher places or further across a pit. But in this game, there are certain objects you can only break by being in your second jump. Like, the motion of the second jump is how you break through the object, which makes it not just a traversal ability, but also like a puzzle ability too, which I like. There are a variety of bosses strewn about. They're not particularly easy either. Like, there's actually some challenge to this game, in that if you take a hit, depending on the type of enemy and the type of armor you're wearing, it could be something as simple as, like, oh, half a heart to one hit kills. Sucker, die smoother next time or something. So they designed it in a sense that upgrading your armor actually does matter, because if you don't, you are likely to die in depressing ways. But on the positive, when you die, there's a pretty generous checkpoint system that will take you back to where that like save statue was. You can traverse again, but your penalty, unfortunately, will be a percentage of the money you have stockpiled. You can reduce that penalty, but at base value, you lose 10% of the money you've been carrying around when you die. And unlike Dark Souls, you can't get it back. It stays gone. Oops. But one nice, you know, thing that they offer to the player is the ability to use a bank in town to store your money, so that if you die, you don't lose that money. Downside to that, though, is that you have to pay to upgrade that bank, and at the base value, you can't just dump all of your cash into it. There is actually a cash ceiling that the bank will let you hold. Imagine if real banks were like that, by the way. Well, I guess I got $100 now. I want to put this away till next paycheck. Nope, can't do that until you give me 50. Pay me $50 to store 100. But it's okay, because this is a game. I respect that. Gotta give you something to spend your money on. Though there is a lot of things to spend your money on, too. So like I said earlier, like, over the course of the game, you'll get new armor. You'll get new weapons, which will essentially allow you to take and dish out more damage. You'll find new items that can allow you to do certain things, like, you know, warp back to base camp and whatnot without penalty. And honestly, the craziest thing about this game... Oh, also I should mention, you get armor augmentations, too. So unlike the armor that just, you know, helps you not take as much damage, you'll also find items that will allow you to, like, kind of buff up base, you know, augmentations. Like, you'll be able to absorb money into your character, or you'll start with more health every time you die. stuff like that. And you'll find multiples of those things, but they stack on each other. So you might find a thing that says, you know, now because of this armor, you got a 2% chance to avoid damage, like an, or sort of like an evade action. But the next time you find it, now you can have a 4% chance of evading, you know, damage. So they just kind of build on top of themselves. So you want to find everything that you can. I feel like the only thing that's rough about this game, which depending on who you are, is either a good thing or a bad thing, is that, again, this game is massive, which means that it is very, very easy to get lost in it, not knowing where the hell to go. And that is including knowledge of there being an actual quest system where the game will give you objectives on which to progress around and figure things out. You'll still get lost. You'll get very lost, and that's kind of okay, because in some respect, you know, just trying to figure things out is the puzzle in and of itself. But I do wish it were, you know, more possible to, like, I don't know, maybe mark exits to rooms that you might not realize you found the exit to yet. Because you can mark rooms and like, hey, this is a place of interest. But I can't mark the room and say, this room has an item that I want to grab, or this room has a hidden exit that I need to go back and locate. There's different kinds of things I want to mark, and the game just only says it has one form of marking. Mashing it.
Hey, up. Better than nothing. Some games don't let you mark rooms at all.
Oh God, don't remind me. When I learned I could just mark the room, I was ecstatic, because like you said, I've played a number of games where I got like a massive sheet of paper. I was gonna say La Mulana, but I love La Mulana, so no. but yeah, I was glad that you could mark the rooms in this game. But it's amazing in that I feel like the only gripes I could have about the game are the fact that you can get lost very easily, and the fact that for as big as the game is, I do wish that there were, like, say, more abilities that you could utilize to progress and find things. And what I mean by that is the aforementioned Always Legacy and Awakening, which I kind of have to compare it to because, I mean, Elden Pixels and Zoe's in the freaking game, so I can do that. That game, the way the puzzles worked was you had, like, magic blocks or magic spells, and you could make the spells better. And each time you made those better, it just changed the puzzles in that game around in a lot of ways, and it made exploration that much more fun because it was utilizing your magic spells to traverse the world. If you took that magic system and put it in a world, this game that's a world that's this big, I'd lose my ever-loving shit over it. But as it stands, I'm just having fun, which is not necessarily a bad thing either, you know? So with that regard, with that in mind, I can't knock the fact that I'm addicted to the game and I'm enjoying it. The music in it is fantastic. Very unconventional, so I'm going to put that out there. But I like what I've heard. Poison Pavilion, my favorite track I've heard so far. At the end of the day, this game is an easy recommendation for me for folks who like action adventure. I guess what they call them now, search action games, because I'm not calling it a Metroidvania. This is not a Metroidvania. I will call it what I think it should be called, which is search action. This is a fantastic search action game.
The search action game.
Yeah, I mean, don't get me wrong. That's not
just an action adventure game.
I can go with that too, but people have standards they want to adhere to, so I got to kind of help a little. But I won't.
Search action makes no sense. But $14.99. What do you think?
We'll talk about that later. I think it's worth every penny for this search action masterpiece. Let me stop. I think it's worth the money. This is a fun game, and to be frank, I did buy it on the Switch after Tim reviewed it and never played it. But now that I'm actually physically playing the game that I got the review copy for, I am very glad I got a chance to play it in that manner, because it bumped this up the line from I'll get to it someday to I got to it and I'm going to stick to it. So worth the money. A guy who has way too many games on his plate is going to keep playing this game.
Fingers crossed we see it come to Xbox in the future. That's the only platform missing, so... Come on, Elden Pixels, don't let us down. Next game is Super Toy Cars Off-Road, developed and published by Eclipse Games, released April 15th on PS4 and PS5 for $19.99. Drive your off-road vehicle where no other toy has gone before. Leave your own trail through burning beach sands among sunscreen sand castles, or step in virgin snow among huge snowboards and ski goggles, or through any of the impressively detailed 15 tracks available in the game. Both you guys played this one. What do you think?
I'll let Chris go into this one first.
Okay. So, yeah, I actually reviewed the first Super Toy Cars a long time ago on Switch. So I had a little bit of experience going into this one. So, yeah, Super Toy Cars Off-Road is basically It's the same premise. You are driving very, very small cars through, you know, regular size places, but of course all of the obstacles are regular size items that are now like gigantic and stuff. This, instead of being like a tabletop or like a kid's playroom or something like that, themed, this is like outdoor themed. And, you know, so like you're driving through like different kinds of environments and such, but like in kind of a different way. They've introduced a couple of new mechanics, and in terms of like, so they've now got these cups that you play through, a little bit like Mario Kart, but the way that it works is that certain cups feature certain levels and certain what would you call it, goals that can only be achieved by certain vehicles, and there's five vehicle types. So actually certain vehicles are locked out of certain cups. And since you only get to start with one vehicle, you got to race on like the first couple of cups, like a lot, in order to buy, like, let's say a truck so that you can play through the truck, stages and things like that. Now they say there's like 45, I think, levels, when you consider the cups, and they say that there's 15 unique stages, but honestly, some of them are a little actually the same stage, but like kind of from a different angle or something like that. So I wouldn't go calling it like 15 totally unique stages. But anyways, so yeah, you drive through, and so you have different things, just like in the first game, you have different goals. Like one of them is like a straight up race. One of them is like elimination, where every few seconds it eliminates whoever's in last place, and you have to just survive against dwindling competition. And then there's my favorite one, especially for when you unlock a truck like I did immediately. And that is to say, there's a destruction mode where they drop in like basically dummy cars. I mean, they're all toys, but I mean, they like literally crash test dummy type cars, just pop into the stage constantly. And you got to run over as many of them as you can while also driving the course. And I completely rule at that.
Nice.
So, yeah. That's the premise. Pernell, do you want to say anything about that?
Not so much. Just all I know about the game is that the other races. All I know about the game is like I dabbled in a few of the races that the game had.
All I know about the game is it's not Cathedral. Fuck it. Back to this.
Well, honestly, that's actually not too far off the mark. But I will say that the race. Come on. Give me some credit. I just ran with the joke. But I did honestly enjoy the racing aspect of the game because I was a fan of Super Toy Cars too. But I have to be honest in the fact that I prefer the theme of Super Toy Cars, the original, to, you know, riding outside. It's dirty out here. It's cool though, right? Like it didn't hit me as much, but yeah. The racing antics of the game are still enjoyable. Like they have the racing component down, I think personally.
Yeah, I would say yes and no on that. For one, so it's got like the Mario Kart style, you know, you drive through a little like looks like a little gotcha, like, you know, or not gotcha, but like, you know, when you put in the quarter and turn the wheel, the thing, and like
it pops out. The ball that has the coin in it, or the
ball,
magic ring.
Yeah, it has like the stickers or the little action figure inside or something. Those are like your power-ups, and they really are very limited on usefulness. Like one of them is a magnet, which picks up an item off of the course and lets you throw it, which is great if you happen to be just behind like a certain racer in the game, which you are likely not to be. And then, you know, they have like boosts, and then they have this, they have one that looks like a spring, and I have no idea what it does. And then they have,
you
like
put it on the track, and when someone runs over it, they go flying up in the air.
Oh, neat. Okay. Yeah. That's cool. So like, they have those things, but they just aren't as, you know, there's no red shell, like, well, there's a missile, but there's, you know, it's not quite
it's
as...
It's a green shell. It just shoots straight forward.
Right, yeah.
I'm in a weird place when it comes to that, though. Like, on one hand, I can see where you're coming from, which is like, where are the staples that I'm used to? They make the game flow, you know? But by that same token, like, they've been done, like... Pretty much that's what everyone looks at now when it comes to the framework for the games. Like, where are the mechanics that originated in Mario Kart? You know, I'll give somebody credit. Like, even if it's not on the same level as those things sometimes, I got to give credit to a studio that's like, you know, we're going to do our take on it. You know, we're going to give you a spring that just bounces you off the map. Or, you know, the thing that lets you pick up an object off the ground, which means that now rather than just throw the object and have it do its thing, you have to actually strategically have it access to it and use it in a place where you have access to a pretty good object you can hurl at a guy. Like, a screw on the ground or something.
Yeah, so
I will say that it is a balance issue when you don't have something like a blue shell that can take out the first place guy who got way too far ahead. Like, there's no rubber banding in this game. So if your opponent gets really far ahead of you, you're screwed. You're not going to catch up.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like it creates this situation where you can't win through like clever item placement or anything like that, like you could in Mario Kart. So it comes down to you to improve your vehicle, which you're spending all of your points trying to unlock the damn things. And then, you know, you've also got to put in all this like work to make them better. So it ends up where you're going to be replaying a lot of courses a lot of times in order to like make headway in this game. I mean, fortunately, you don't actually have to win. I mean, like, not all the time, but, you know, at least
you get more when you win.
You get more when you win, exactly, and it makes you win faster. So the big elephant in the room, I think, that I want to talk about with this game, and this is really what kind of wrecked it for me. Wrecked. The frame rate. This game moves at a very smooth, 18 frames a second?
Really?
Yeah, it chugs, even compared to the first game on the Switch, which I said that the first game on the Switch had some frame rate hiccups, too, because of the sheer amount of stuff that's around. But honestly, I loaded that thing up today. It performs like way better than this game. It moves slow to the fact where you can you can see the background kind of going by and it like looks kind of choppy. And this is on a PlayStation 4, folks. That really set me back on this one. And it's too bad because, like, you know, and this may be the reason, but it's like the backgrounds look great. Like, you know, an umbrella spans like half the course. And so it's like you'll be oohing and aahing at like a beach umbrella, you know, but it's like, and the texture on the ground looks good. Like, everything looks good, but it doesn't move good, which is very poisonous for a racing game. Especially one.
Did this happen on every course you did, pretty much, or was it only specific ones of like high intensity?
I never found a course that moved very well, not compared to like the Switch version of the first game.
That might be worth mentioning here, then, though. I don't feel like it's a credit to the game, because if it was developed for PS4, then let's be honest, it should be able to run on the PS4. But I played it on the PS5, and I didn't have any issues as far as like the frame rate went. It kind of moved like at a decent clip, which is why I didn't mention it earlier. But again, if it was developed for the PS4, it should run well on the PS4.
Yeah, I just loaded it up on Xbox like just now to check it out, and it was nice and smooth. I never had any frame rate issues with this one, so I'm not sure if it's an isolated incident on your end, if it's just the game being wonky, or if the performance on the PS4 just isn't that good compared to other consoles.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely haven't looked at it on PS5 or Xbox, but it was sure slow on the PS4 when I played it.
It does worry me, because I know they are working on a Switch version for the game, and I wonder if that spells doom for it.
Well, I'm wondering, too, if maybe they developed it for those higher power systems and just slapped it on the PS4 without like downgrading anything to get the frame back up to spec. I'm almost sure for the Switch version, they'll have to like take out some of those textures and stuff to get it to actually run. So maybe it'll be a weird situation where it'll actually run really well on the Switch. I mean, they've done it before, so
yeah.
Open.
Well, the game's $20 on PlayStation. What do you guys think?
Go ahead.
First. No, after you, sir.
For the version I played on the PS4, I'm going to give it a try. Make sure that you're okay with the frame rate being what it is, or if there's like some improvement or patch or anything. Right now, this game could not get 20 of my dollars if I was asked to buy it. I mean, there's games that look as good as this game that run silky smooth on systems with less processing power. So, like Fast RMX on the Switch is a great example of a $20 racer that, oh man, that thing's like the new F-Zero basically. But, yeah, that game's great. So I'm going to give this one a try. Love the concept, love the look. Not a big fan of like the recycled levels and music, which I didn't even talk about, but you know, everything else was fine. It's just, if it would have run better, my score would be better.
For now, thoughts?
I would go with the try element too, specifically because of the performance that he mentioned. Because while I didn't have that performance issue, I think I'm comfortable in believing that the issue was just because I was running on a 5 and not a 4. And
yeah, because I played on a Series X. I didn't play on an Xbox One, so I don't know how it performs on last gen on the Xbox side. It might be a similar situation.
I'm honestly betting it would be. It seems like, I mean, it seems like that would definitely be the case, in which case I can't give a full recommendation in that regard. But based on like what I did play of the game in a working environment, I did find the racing element to be very fun and enjoyable. While the weapons and all aren't as, you know, structured around, you know, balance as say Mario Kart is, I do feel like they have they bring a unique element to their own to this game's world, unique. Which makes me, God damn it. I'd give games points for trying to be, I would think, outside of the, you know, the established norm. So I'm okay with that. If anything, the only regret I wish there were more characters to add that level of personality to the actual racers as well.
Oh, yeah, true.
Chris, what were you going to say about the soundtrack?
The soundtrack reuses some songs from the previous games, and it's just...
Does it?
Yeah, it's indie music, I guess, that they just kind of licensed in, or maybe they were written for the game, I don't know, but like they're tracks that have a full like outro and completely end right around the first lap, and then they start completely over. Usually you finish the race about halfway through the second or third full playthrough of an actual written produced song. And the written
it is a licensed soundtrack. It was put together, yeah. I think by I think it's Tyson of the Spinwires. The Spinwires is one of the bands that has a number of tracks in the game, and the singer for the band basically had a hand in putting the soundtrack together. So
the songs themselves weren't bad. It is
weird to have music like start and stop during the races. I had the same issue with Hot Wheels Unleashed. They'll have a song just end out of nowhere, have like radio static, and then a new song start, and it's just jarring. It's weird.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, it doesn't make me think of, you know, toys. Like, you know, I'm thinking I would like something maybe a little more eclectic. It, you know, kind of sounded like kind of mall music, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, like 2000s mall music. You but know,
not,
again,
hopefully not Muzak.
No, it wasn't Muzak. It wasn't. They aren't bad songs. These are songs I would listen to just like on, you know, on their own. It just it didn't. Yeah, and funny enough, like the game's default volume settings are such to where I didn't know there was a soundtrack at first. And then I went to the menu and had to turn the music all the way up to 100 and the sound effects down to like 60. Oh, and then finally I got a balance. But that could just be my sound setup. That's not anything to do with the game. But yeah, that was just the thing. And yeah, elsewhere online, I was like, because I was like, I know I recognize one of these songs. And they were like, yeah, this song was used in the other game. I was like, oh, okay.
So, yeah, I did not pay attention to the whole soundtrack. So it's definitely. Yeah.
It was such a small point that it barely made the cut. If you hadn't asked, I wouldn't have said.
All right. Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Monster Master, developed and published by Flatfish Games. Released April 8th on Steam Early Access for $13.99. The game is set in the small town of Kingsfield, where an energy research facility has given birth to a cosmic horror entity called the Monster Master. Players can choose to control and mutate the monster horde or survive as a group of class-based heroes with unique powers.
Unique.
Chris, tell us about Monster Master.
Okay, so Monster Master is a online only, multiplayer only game that was recently kickstarted into existence. It has a great premise. I'm going to say that much. So you can choose to be one of the heroes, or you can choose to be the bad guy. If you're one of the heroes, then you are thrust with two other player characters into a first-person shooter situation, and it really is like an MMO, an online-style thing. It's like you start off in an area that has plenty of loadout, like, you know, some chests with items in it and stuff like that, you know, your med packs and your grenades and what have you. You can choose from four different characters. They each have, you know, two things that they can do. but you know, one of them is usually kind of a defensive move and one of them is kind of a shooting move. So, you know, it's not, you know, they're unique, but not exactly like, you know, night and day differences or anything. They're pretty cool characters though. So yeah, you run around in this first person thing and you team up, because you have to team up, against groups of like big bright pink zombies that come after you, big elite monsters that are faster than you and also stronger. So you got to like cleverly take them down and find cover or use your defensive capabilities. And then, you know, eventually, you know, fight some big nasty and whatnot in order to clear the stage. And then your rank goes up. I don't know what the rank does, but it goes up. The other option is that you can be the monster master. And instead of it being a first-person game, now it's an RTS, where the other characters are moving around your real-time strategy map in real-time, and you are dropping the monsters down in there to fight them. You're also activating traps and doing whatever you can to eliminate the heroes before they can, you know, eliminate you.
That's a cool twist.
It's a great, great premise. So yeah, it's basically one person's playing an RTS and the others are down there on the ground actually fighting it in FPS. So that's awesome. Here's the problem. Nobody's playing this game right now. So I had to test out both things all by myself. Also, the game has no tutorials. So I had to learn all of this from watching other gameplay videos and also like reading up on it, actually going to the Kickstarter and reading about it and like looking at it. And, you know, there's a lot of outside of actually playing the game type of research I had to do just to figure out how this game works. So having said, I really would have appreciated if in a future build or, you know, the complete version or whatever is coming, please use the game to explain to people how to play the game. You know, if you've got something that's like actually original, which this is, it bears explanation for new players, especially people who are kind of like, you know, used to FPS, but, you know, maybe they don't know about RTS. So yeah, I had trouble with the RTS part of it, but it kind of didn't matter because there weren't players on the map to defeat my monsters, so I couldn't really do anything as the bad guy is the problem. And even then, like, that's only because, you know, I click on, you know, start a game, waited around for a few minutes, nobody came, so I was like, okay, force start, which just forces the game to start, which if you're one of the heroes is okay because it will drop in, like, the monsters at you like intermittently, but if you're all alone, it's very hard to take out like the big guys and such. So, you know, you might as well be, you know, facing down a wheelchair monster with a nail gun. So yeah, I ended up dying a lot. And, but I liked some of the ways that like you can die in the game. Like for instance, there's this really big monster that can eat you. And if it eats you, you see the teeth like close around the camera.
That's nice.
Just kind of, yeah, I like
touches like that. Yeah,
yeah. There's a lot of cleverness going on into this game, but it very much feels like it's not finished enough yet for me to like really say much about like the details of it. Just yeah, that I really. Oh, go ahead.
I was gonna say they're saying on the Steam page that it might be in early access, at least until 2024.
Yeah. So.
It could be quite a ways off still.
Could be, but I like where they're going with it. So that's, you know, that's as much as I feel like really criticizing the game. I like where they're going, but I don't think they're there yet.
And no one is there yet. I think that's right. The biggest problem with exactly. The game is no one's there playing it. And if the game doesn't have a player base, why would you pick it up?
You know, I mean, well, the thing is, too, about it is that, you know, it seems like this is one that you can very easily coordinate with your friends. If you got three friends that have this and or, you know, three or four friends, then this does sound like this is one of those things that may turn out to be kind of like a sleeper hit for people, because I can definitely see where, you know, your most sadistic friend being the RTS, you know, bad guy, and, you know, your team being the like the good guys and such, like this could, you know, it can actually create some really interesting conflict. And I really look forward to like what ends up happening like that with this game. I don't have friends that I can, that I can shove this on. So I can't speak to that as from an experience standpoint. I can just say that from imagining it to be what it could be, I think that this is a lot of promise.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, $14. Is it worth investing now? Would you wish list it? What are your thoughts on how would you handle this for now?
I would say it's worth a wish list. As far as going all in on it, I would honestly coordinate that with your gaming buddies and see if they're also interested in it. Because right now, this game is a playground for you and your friends. You know, school's out at the moment, so you're not going to find a lot of strangers to hang with on this one. And that's going to change as it goes along, I'm sure. Like I said, the Kickstarter seemed like it was they're taking it real seriously. And like I said, the ideas are there. So, I would definitely put this on the wish list and keep an eye out for it. And, you know, if you got some friends and you want to mess with it, I say make sure you got those friends and then, go ahead and purchase it.
Cool. Sounds like a fun group game as long as the people are there. So hopefully it catches on. I really like the aspect of having an RTS as the other side of the playing field.
And yeah, that is way cool.
Too, honestly, because honestly, I'll be honest with you. I say honest a lot. The other honest thing, though,
it's unique that you say that.
It makes me think about a kind of game I always wanted to come out of the Wii U that never happened. Because the whole touchscreen bit that was off to the side, I felt like it would have been cool to have a survival game where the person on the touchpad was manipulating pieces on a board and the people in the actual game world on the TV were actually dealing with the guy on the touchscreen was actually manipulating on the touchscreen.
Oh yeah, that would have been great.
It's so, real like, dungeon master.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, and I to this day, you no matter how much you hear me talk about how much I love the Switch, I will also forever say they fucked up with the Wii U. Like they squandered so much potential with
what?
That.
No.
Right. Yeah, they could have come out with an Etrian Odyssey for it too. I was really looking for that to come out, and you know, it might have happened if they sold more units or something, but it was not fated to be. That's all right.
Unfortunately.
Ah, well, that is it for this episode. Thank you to you guys for being here and making it happen with me. Thanks to Tim for being here and doing his thing as well. Brooke, hopefully we'll be back next week if she's back from her vacation, but it might be the week after. Who knows? All that matters is that she's having fun, and I'm not going to be having fun because tomorrow I'm getting all my teeth ripped out.
But you'll be asleep. Wow.
So we'll take this moment as a moment of silence for the fucked up jagged teeth I got left, and we will take us out with some mustin.
But God, because my teeth too big.
Life is but a moment, a single grain of sand that slips right through the hourglass and slips right through your hand. You've shown me how to make each moment count, and I know now what life's all about. Life is but a twinkle, the winking of an eye, a star that lights the universe, a flash across the skies. It came to me just like a shooting star. You gave to me the love that's in your heart. Oh.
I truly do believe if only